Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Porter with a rebound. He's going to go right back up. Couple head fakes. He flips it up and in. Kevin Porter Jr. got 22 points now. A double-double with a season-high 12 rebounds.
Bucks talk starts now.
Fifth steal, and they do get it away. Porter's going the way to Giannis. He takes flight. Flight 34, you are clear for takeoff.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia.
Well, what an impressive win tonight for the Bucks, who stormed back to beat the Heat, a game they trailed by double digits in the second half. It was a tie game at halftime. Miami's been playing a lot better of late. They had a 10-game losing streak, followed that up with six straight wins, all by double digits, but they've now dropped two in a row. You sweep the season series with Miami for the first time in 10 years, and you move into sole possession of fifth in the Eastern Conference standings. I don't want to make too much of the last part because a lot is still to be decided, and it's in all likelihood going to come down to those final two games against the Pistons, Friday night in Detroit and Sunday afternoon in Milwaukee. But this was a really gritty win by the Bucks, and another historic performance from Giannis. We touched on this in what he did Thursday night, where it was the third time in NBA history that somebody posted a stat line of 35, 20, and 15. It was the first time the 20 was assists and not rebounds. Wilt Chamberlain and Nikola Jokic had each had 20 rebound, 15 assist games while scoring 35. But tonight, another triple-double from Giannis, his ninth of the season. And when you combine his stat line from tonight with what he did Thursday, he becomes the first player in NBA history to, over a two-game span, score 70 or more points, have 30 or more rebounds, and 30 or more assists. You go back to what Doc Rivers said after the game Thursday night against the Sixers, and, well, not Doc Rivers, I take that back, what Darvin Ham said, and then what Doc said before the game tonight about, look, Giannis told me when I arrived, I'm a point guard. I can play like a point guard. I want the ball in my hands. Only problem there, you got Damian Lillard. You still have a point guard. Well, you don't have him right now. And I do want to get to the interesting thing that Doc Rivers had to say about Damian Lillard before the game. But in the interim, you know, Doc was asked, why has the offense been much better? For all the conversations we had about this Bucks offense, it's not been good enough. You know, the defense has really been consistently in the top 10, but the offense has not been good enough. It's all of a sudden changed, where you're getting a lot more consistent offense. What has been the biggest change here? And as Doc said, it's we're playing everything through Giannis. Ball's in his hands a lot more, and he's just making the right reads. And you go back to that game against the Sixers where at halftime, Giannis told his teammates, look, just be in the right spots. I know where to get the ball to. I know how they're defending me. I know what to do in those spots. If you're in your spot, you're going to get an open look. And that's what we saw. And we mentioned what he's done over these last two games and really the performance against Philly, too, where you talk about, well, nobody other than Nikola Jokic and Wilt Chamberlain have done that. Wilt Chamberlain had the video game numbers before Nikola Jokic arrived, and Giannis can be thrown in there as well. But I think what you've seen these last two games is the talent around Giannis has obviously been there. You know, for as much as we can have a tendency to criticize, oh, this guy isn't good enough, or what are you doing building this team around Giannis with this guy or this guy or this guy? The fact of the matter is Giannis has had a lot of talent around him. Chris Middleton, you think about that. Now Damian Lillard, Drew Holiday before that. He's had pretty good players surrounding him. And I'm not saying Nikola Jokic has not. But I think we've seen more stretches in Denver where Nikola Jokic has had to take over and really put everything on his shoulders. What we've seen from the Bucks and from Giannis since, what, March 20th, which was the first game that Dame Lillard missed with the what we now know to be blood clots. What we've seen from Giannis since then is basically that same thing that we've seen from Nikola Jokic with some of those stat lines, where it's been on Nikola Jokic to take everything, to just take over. Scoring the basketball, assists, rebounds, he's had to carry the load. That's what we've seen from Giannis during this stretch, and I think what stands out the most is, look, I'm not advocating Giannis needs to be the MVP this season, because when you're fifth place in the Eastern Conference, you're not going to be in the conversation. But it's easy to write things off and say, well, look at how good Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is. Look at what the advanced numbers are telling us about Nikola Jokic, and forget what Giannis is doing on both ends of the floor and what Giannis is capable of doing night in, night out on both ends of the floor. This stretch here has been that reminder for everybody else. What, seven-game stretch now without Damian Lillard, where we are being reminded, yeah, this is what this guy is capable of doing. A nine-game stretch that we're seeing here. That's what stands out the most. 800-990-3776, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. A very, very impressive win tonight for this group. And it came in waves and from a number of different players. And this was another one of those games where we talked about Ryan Rollins the past couple of games and how certainly feels like he's moved past Kevin Porter Jr. And then Kevin Porter Jr. does this tonight. Kevin Porter Jr. has a similar game against the Minnesota Timberwolves going into the All-Star break. Kevin Porter Jr.'s had those games, and the Bucks have been fortunate enough that it just seems like when one of those two guys is struggling, or in the case of Ryan Rollins tonight, runs into foul trouble, the other guy's having a pretty impactful game. But you get the win on a night where the Detroit Pistons lose to at least give yourself some breathing room. And now, can you do the same thing tomorrow? It's going to be interesting to see who's going to be on the floor for the Bucks. I don't think it's as simple as Giannis played it a lot tonight, so we're going to sit him against the New Orleans Pelicans. It's a game you frankly should win, with or without Giannis, because you know the player participation policy comes into play, and it's a road game, too. That's important to point out. I do wonder if we see Giannis missing that game before the Pistons game when the Pelicans come to Milwaukee. But look, either way, you won tonight on a night where the Pistons lose, and now tomorrow, the goal, win tomorrow on a night where the Indiana Pacers play the Denver Nuggets and could potentially lose, and then you're moving into the final week of the season where you're two games back of the Indiana Pacers, and they have two games against the Cleveland Cavaliers in those final four games. 800-990-3776, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We'll see what the latest odds are saying, how the Eastern Conference is going to shake out in the standings, and take a closer look at what this Bucks offense has started to do now in the absence of Damian Lillard and just playing exclusively through Giannis. We'll see what the numbers tell us coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
Stick around. Bucks Talk continues next, presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
...121-115 final in overtime. Bucks come back to beat the Miami Heat behind a triple-double from Giannis, his ninth of the season, a near triple-double from Kevin Porter Jr., and a career-high 12 rebounds from KPJ. He nearly played 40 minutes. KPJ was fantastic. He had the game-clinching basket, too, that put you up two possessions, and the Heat would turn the ball over with 10 seconds left, and you wrap things up. So, again, you've been fortunate to get big games from Kevin Porter Jr. on off nights from Ryan Rollins and vice versa. The other area that really stands out, or I should say the area that really stands out in terms of positives for the Bucks, is the offense, right? Like, who would have thought we'd be saying, man, this offense has been fantastic when Damian Lillard went down? And to be clear, I am not suggesting the Bucks are a better team, and I don't think any of us are or should, a better team without Damian Lillard. But I think this kind of shows you what the split should be, or what you should lean into a little bit more with Giannis really running the show here and, you know, letting Damian Lillard play off the ball a little bit more as well to preserve him some. But in these nine games that the Bucks have played with Dame on the sidelines, battling through deep vein thrombosis, the Bucks, and let's preface here too, nine is not a large sample size, but the Bucks have the fourth best offense in the league in these past nine games. Boston Celtics are number one at a 126 offensive rating. They've gone 7-1 in those games played since this date that Dame went out. The Houston Rockets are number two. They're 6-2 with a 121.7 offensive rating. The Oklahoma City Thunder are number three. They got a 121.6 offensive rating. They've also gone 7-1. And then you got the Bucks, who have gone 5-4, but they have a 121.6 offensive rating. Same for all intents and purposes as the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, don't ask about the defense. It's an entirely different conversation, but I think there's easy explanations for why the defense has slid to what it has slid down to. But this offense is just creating efficient nights, night in, night out. It's another game where the Bucks shot better than 50%. They had that stretch of historic shooting performances. You think about the game against the Phoenix Suns, where the Bucks had the most efficient night we have seen offensively for an NBA team this century. It was 1998, the last time we saw a team shoot just as high or better from the field than the Bucks did against the Suns just a couple of games ago. Carried that over pretty much against the Philadelphia 76ers. And tonight, you shoot better than 50% against the Miami Heat. So we're all of a sudden starting to see this team find a lot of efficient offense. And again, I do think it's going to improve once Damian Lillard comes back. I don't think this is a, well, you got rid of Dame and the offense got better. I think what you're seeing is it may have taken too long, but unlocking, okay, this is the way that this team needs to play. The big piece of Dame, if, I think I said when before, but we should preface, if Damian Lillard comes back, is it gives you minutes where you can manage having somebody out there that can carry that offensive load when Giannis is off the floor. That's the biggest thing that's missing right now. For as great as Giannis has been and knowing what he has to do and take things over here, you're still running into issues when he's off the floor. So you do need some help there. Now, Bobby Portis is going to give you some of that help when he returns on Tuesday. You're still very hopeful that Jericho Sims is going to be back for the playoffs. I know he has been around the team more. He's been on the court doing some things. He's obviously not cleared for a full return yet, but the hope still remains when the playoffs begin. And again, the other thing to keep in mind is the important part for the Bucks, certainly for Jericho Sims, I think to a lesser extent for Damian Lillard, is that result earlier tonight where the Knicks beat the Hawks. It clinched a playoff spot for the Bucks, meaning they can't slide any lower than sixth. And when you do that, it buys you an extra week. The play-in tournament starts Tuesday. You know, the regular season ends 1 week from tomorrow. The play-in tournament starts 2 days later. So if you're one of those four teams in 7 through 10, you're playing potentially throughout that week. You're playing Tuesday. You got to play later in the week for the 8 seed. You're doing that as well. But if you're 1 through 6, you don't have to worry about that. And, you know, it's especially once you get to that 3, 4, 5, 6 spot, you know exactly who you're playing. And you got a full week to dig into prep for that. But in the case of the Bucks, for a guy like Jericho Sims, you get a week off where you can continue to rehab and hopefully he's ready once the playoffs begin. Bobby Portis, though, is going to be huge when he's able to return on Tuesday. And even Doc joked about it. You know, we kind of joked as a staff that Bobby's going to be so fired up, he's going to foul out in 10 minutes on Tuesday night against the Minnesota Timberwolves. But when I mentioned the offense has been great in these nine games, defense not so much. It is a 118.8 defensive rating in that nine-game stretch. That's 23rd in the league. I think the easy explanation there is what we've seen in two areas, but really one specifically. Bucks have fell victim to a lot of turnovers. That's not anything that Bobby Portis is going to fix per se, but they've also really started to slide on the defensive glass and just rebounding as a whole. You know, in that same stretch, the Bucks are 28th in rebounding rate. Defensive rebounding, the Bucks are 26th. This is a Bucks team that was anywhere from first through fifth for most of this season on the defensive glass. And it's not just this year. That's been a staple of the Bucks with Brooke Lopez, with Giannis, with Bobby Portis, right? For the last, what, 7 years? Last 5 years with Bobby Portis. But that group, for the most part, for the last 7 years, they've been a really good defensive rebounding team. They've slid down to 26th in that nine-game stretch. It's around the same since shortly after the All-Star break when Bobby Portis went down and started serving that 25-game suspension. They haven't been a good offensive rebounding team for the bulk of that seven-year stretch. There was the 1 year under Mike Budenholzer, the year after the championship, where the Bucks just kind of committed to let's get more offensive rebounds. They're not in the top there. They're not near the top there. They're 30th during this stretch at just under a 22% rate. So in other words, when they miss their shots, 21% of the time they're getting the rebound. So nearly 80% of the time the opponent is getting the defensive rebound. That's what you need to do on the other end of the floor, especially when you're playing without some big pieces with firepower here. And the Bucks have done the opposite of it. They got a 67% defensive rebounding rate. That is basically 10 percentage points lower than the top team, the Los Angeles Clippers. And it's right around where the Bucks have been, in the mid to high 70s for most of the season. So that's quite a fall off. And that, to me, is the biggest reason why the defense has gone from hovering around the top 10 to, in this nine-game stretch, right around the bottom five. Because if you're giving the opponents extra possessions, we often talk about the math game and, hey, threes are worth more than two. But the other piece to the math game is field goal attempts. You know, it's everybody's favorite phrase, to borrow it from another sport and team in this city: you give the other team more bites at the apple, it's going to be gone before it's your turn. And again, tonight was another one of those nights where you had the opponent take a significantly higher volume of shots than you. 102 field goal attempts for the Heat. Bucks took 87. We've seen that difference much larger these past couple of weeks. And tonight, the big piece for the Bucks too, a large part of that was they took 29 free throw attempts. So that's a part of it. But Miami outscored you by 10 on second chance points. They had 12 offensive rebounds, scored 12 points off of those. You had three and scored two, and the 2 points came from Kevin Porter Jr. late in the game. So that's the other thing, as this team has not been full strength, that we've circled every single game and basically said before the game, each pregame show we've done, this is probably going to decide the game tonight. The points you're getting off of turnovers and the points you're getting second chance variety off of offensive rebounds. Bucks had a stretch for three or four games where they were consistently being outscored by 25 or more in those two areas combined. That is not sustainable, right? If you're giving the team more cracks at it and they're scoring in those in that fashion, why those stand out so much is you get offensive rebounds for the most part. Those are going to be putbacks, dunks or layups right around the rim. Or it's kickouts, corner threes that you're getting. And then turnovers, if they're live ball turnovers and you're scoring off of those are traditionally going to be layups. Again, you're getting out in transition, and that's another area we've seen slip for the Bucks. So I don't think Bobby Portis is the panacea and he returns and all of a sudden, hey, the defense is great once again, but it should take some large steps towards that. And he should definitely help your offense too, especially in those moments where Giannis is off the floor. So you just got one more game to manage without Bobby Portis on the floor. And then you get him back for your two biggest games of the season. You know, it starts Tuesday against the Minnesota Timberwolves, Thursday against the New Orleans Pelicans, and then those two games, Friday night in Detroit against the Pistons and Sunday afternoon at home against the Pistons. We'll take a look at what the latest odds are telling us here. What is the percentage chance for the Bucks to stay where they are at 5? What do the numbers suggest is the most likely landing spot for the Bucks? We'll get into those numbers coming up after this on Bucks Talk. Another triple-double from Giannis, his 9th of the season, and a near triple-double from Kevin Porter Jr. It would have been his 2nd in a Bucks uniform. Kevin Porter Jr., I'm sure there was a lot of skepticism and questions, I guess would be the best way to put it, when that deal was made. But we said at the time there were some off-the-court events that obviously warranted some exploring. And as Doc Rivers said, we did our due diligence. He has a great relationship, Doc does, with Ty Lue. And Ty Lue vouched for him. We've heard a number of players say the same thing. But it was interesting with KPJ because the numbers suggested he was one of the more inefficient players in the league in the first half of the season with the Clippers. And Kevin Porter Jr. talked about this himself and said, you know, I just want to be somewhere where I'm wanted and where I get this opportunity. And it just wasn't going to happen in Los Angeles with the Clippers because James Harden, you know, runs a pretty heliocentric offense there, and he's a big component of it. Chris Dunn, not necessarily a point guard, but he's another guy that's going to take on a lot of those duties. And then you bring in Ben Simmons, who is, for all intents and purposes, a 6'10" point guard. So he just gets lost in the shuffle there. And he wanted a place where he could make this his home. And Doc Rivers said from day one, you know, we want to coach the person and build him up and support him as a person and see what we can get from Kevin Porter Jr. as the player. There's one thing that was indisputable at the time of that deal, and that was, look, the talent that Kevin Porter Jr. has, to get that for Marjon Beauchamp was a home run for the Bucks. And it's not to disparage Marjon, it's just a simple fact. The Bucks earlier in the year had declined the fourth-year player option for Marjon Beauchamp. You don't decline that and then bring the guy back in the offseason. I'm sure it's happened before. I can't tell you off the top of my head the last time it happened was. It's a sign of this guy's not a part of our plans. Go forward. And the league knows that. You know, like I remember on this show, other outlets as well, we'd have the conversation where people would say, well, trade Marjon Beauchamp. Trade Marjon Beauchamp for this player. And I suppose myself and everybody else was wrong because I remember saying, well, it's not that easy. If the league knows you declined his option, they know you're not signing him. Who's going to trade for Marjon Beauchamp? Even if they see something there, they got to really see something to know we want to be first here. We want to beat everybody else to the punch and say, there's something there we can work with, because you know you're going to have an opportunity to sign him in the offseason. And this in many ways felt like two teams doing one another a solid in saying, we don't really have the space for Kevin Porter Jr. And again, the numbers suggested he did not have a good first half of the season. The efficiencies, the playing time, all of it, and what he was asked to do with the Clippers. It really reeked of the Clippers saying, we like the guy, here's an opportunity for him. And the Bucks doing the same thing and saying, all right, Marjon, we're going to send you off to the Clippers, a team that's having a decent amount of success here. Maybe you'll find a role there. And the fact that the Clippers already waived him and he's now with the New York Knicks, I think shows you how Marjon Beauchamp, and on a two-way with the Knicks, by the way, shows you how Marjon Beauchamp is viewed across the league. To get Kevin Porter Jr. for Marjon Beauchamp, I don't know that that quote-unquote saved the Bucks season, but where would this team be right now without him, when you can point to at least 3 or 4 games where I think you can confidently say the Bucks don't win this game without Kevin Porter Jr.? He does have a player option this summer. And that's the other thing that's popped up where you see games like this. I think the first instance we saw of it was that game the Bucks played shorthanded and beat the Minnesota Timberwolves, where Kevin Porter Jr. hit some big shots down the stretch. You know what he's capable of doing, and the Bucks are certainly very aware of what Kevin Porter Jr. is capable of doing, having scored 50 points against the Bucks in an NBA game when he was a member of the Houston Rockets. But I think it's obviously more than paid off, this deal that the Bucks made, and all these moves at the deadline. We can still debate the on-the-court fit for Kyle Kuzma, and Doc said once again before the game tonight, it's not quite there yet. We're still working at it. But the flexibility, it opened up. You know, you shaved money off of your cap, and I don't mean that in a sense of, hey, the ownership group saved money on the tax. But as we've learned in these past, 18 months, it's going to be important to really navigate that cap in the second apron. So what the Bucks did was they saved a lot of money. They opened up their 2032 first-round pick by not being a second apron team now this season. They still have their 2031 pick that they can use. They have a descending contract in the case of Kyle Kuzma, so it goes down in value year after year. He's younger than Chris Middleton, and it's shaved enough not only to get you under the second apron, but to the point where, look, another thing of when we say, I don't know that any of us would have foreseen this, when we talk about, hey, the Bucks defense has consistently been in the top 10 this season. Well, maybe the most surprising thing of all when I say, I don't know that any of us saw this coming, is the fact that because of that trade, I mean, it's not off the table that the Bucks could be a cap space team this summer. Brooke Lopez is a free agent. I think there's still, as much as it appears a large portion of Bucks fans are opposed to it, I think there's still a healthy appetite for the Bucks to work out a deal with Brooke Lopez and keep him here. Granted, I would assume at a discount, but Brooke Lopez is a 37-year-old free agent. Who knows what's decided there? Bobby Portis has a player option that he could decline. And, you know, I think before, we'll be interesting to see what this 25-game suspension means in terms of how Bobby Portis is viewed across the league, because I think before that suspension, it was all but a given. There's more money out there for Bobby Portis, not necessarily saying he's going to leave the Bucks, but $12 million contract for the productivity that Bobby Portis gives you, he's outplayed that. So I think it was a given that he was going to decline that option and either get more money from the Bucks or elsewhere. Who knows what the suspension means and does to that now. But there are avenues for all of a sudden this team to have cap space to use in the offseason. But with Kevin Porter Jr., you know, people have suggested, well, this is a guy that I'd like to continue to develop. And we already see people in the chat saying Giannis and KPJ are your duo going forward. I don't know that we've gotten there yet. But the concern over, well, what if Kevin Porter Jr. opts out? I think that's a good problem to have, right? Number one, it doesn't mean he's gone. But if Kevin Porter Jr. decides to opt out of his contract this summer, it means he's giving you even more productivity, especially in the playoffs. Like, I think he's already reached the point where it's probably going to happen. But again, opting out of your contract doesn't mean you're gone. You can still opt out and work out a 2+1 or something like that with your team. And that applies to Bobby Portis as well. But doing that is a good thing, as much as we may not think. That's a good thing for the Bucks. It means he has outplayed that value. He gave you big moments in the playoffs, you would assume. I think that's a good thing to happen for this team. But continuing to hone that from Kevin Porter Jr. and what he gives you, you know, this is a team in the Bucks that have taken a lot of mid-range jump shots. And we hit this stretch where that was, you know, not only frowned upon, that was discouraged and basically told, don't do that. Not just by Butt, by a lot of coaches and a lot of talking heads in the league. Those are the inefficient shots. It's going to be a very interesting test case, and especially if you can get Damian Lillard back, because even without Chris Middleton, the Bucks have assembled a roster full of guys that really like to hunt in the mid-range. We've talked a lot about what Giannis is doing this season. Bobby Portis, that's his shot too, right? He can hit threes, but Bobby Portis likes to play back to the basket, hit that turnaround face-up jumper. Kevin Porter Jr. has really excelled at it. And I think why you've seen them lean into it a lot this season is, you know, not only that they have the personnel to do it, and Chris Middleton was one of those guys too. But it's one of the things we've heard from Doc Rivers too. Like, look, it's a big misnomer of you don't take mid-range shots. Obviously, we would like more dunks and layups and threes than anything else. But mid-range shots are important in the playoffs. Those are the shots that win games and win series. Because of how offense is bogged down, you don't get quite as many transition opportunities. You don't typically play at a higher pace, which is what makes that potential matchup in the first round with the Indiana Pacers fascinating. You need to score in the half court. And one way you can do that efficiently is with mid-range jump shots. So that's one thing to kind of keep in the back of your mind whenever we find out what the opponent is and what this matchup is for the Bucks, and again, where their health is at. Because as good as the offense has looked, and it has looked very good, you need to finish possessions. So if Bobby Portis carries a lot of that, great. I think Jericho Sims is going to be a big piece of that as well, and the hope is still there. He's going to be back for the playoffs. So if you can continue to get this offense you've got and now start to clean some of these things up, it makes the Bucks a very interesting team, assuming that health is there, going into the postseason. We mentioned the name of Damian Lillard. Still, we'll get to what the odds say here for the standings. But we mentioned the name of Damian Lillard, and Doc Rivers gave a little bit of an update on that. I think there's been a lot of misconception out there and a lot of wrong assumptions. And Doc, I don't know if I'd say cleared it up, but I think reminded everybody what the thought needs to be surrounding Damian Lillard as his team heads into the playoffs. We'll get into that discussion coming up after this on Bucks Talk.
Stick around. Bucks Talk continues next. Presented by Gruber Law Offices. One call, that's all.
The Bucks come back to beat the Miami Heat tonight in overtime. A very impressive win. Not only the triple-double from Giannis, near triple-double from Kevin Porter Jr., a career-high 12 rebounds tonight from Kevin Porter Jr., and you've started to see more and more of these instances from KPJ, the mid-range offense that he gives you. More of a point guard, a true point guard than Ryan Rollins, too. So you've all of a sudden started to assemble some depth there. When you think back to last year and even earlier this year when you were really Damian Lillard and DeLon Wright were your point guards. And I know I advocated earlier in the season that, look, DeLon Wright has not been as bad as a lot of fans have complained. I think he's been fine because of what he's given you defensively. But the offense was certainly not good enough. And what Kevin Porter Jr. and Ryan Rollins have done in this role far exceeds what the Bucks have gotten from the backup point guard spot for years now. You know, it's really like dating back to the first run of George Hill with the Bucks, when again he wasn't a true point guard; he was more of a combo guy. But that's what you're starting to get now from this group. You had not only that big game that KPJ had against the Mavs in a sense of. Against the Timberwolves, where he hit some big shots and had some big moments to help you close out that win. He had a triple-double in that win against the Mavericks earlier this year. He almost had a triple-double tonight. So he's given you that. Ryan Rollins has given you that. And again, you start to feel pretty good about the pieces that you've assembled now. But they have certainly been leaned on quite a bit more with the absence of Damian Lillard. And, you know, I've said this on this show just about every game since it was revealed what Damian Lillard was dealing with. I still think you have to go forward with the assumption that Damian Lillard is not going to return this season. If he does, great. But you can't view this as, we're just waiting for Superman to return and to save us. And you get him and you get Giannis and we feel like everything's fixed and this team all of a sudden becomes very dangerous. I think you have to go forward with a plan very similar to last year when we said the same thing. Assume Giannis isn't going to play and figure out how do you beat the Pacers with this group. What's the game plan? Ironically enough, it may be the Pacers again. And we'll get to those numbers in just a second. But you have to approach this thinking you're not going to have Dame. And there was a ton of optimism, and I saw a lot of misrepresentation and people misconstruing things and you know, saying things or taking from it things that weren't actually said in that report that came out from Sham Sharania earlier in the week. Somebody else told me earlier or mentioned earlier today, too, of like, I just heard he was close to returning. That has never been said. You know, like, I don't recall verbatim what Sham Sharania said, but he used the words optimism and hopeful, and that he's hopeful to get cleared for, I think, activity in the next week to week and a half. Getting cleared for activity does not mean you're close to returning. The Bucks, anybody that has spoken on this or any information the Bucks have released, they have never once said Dame is close to a return. You have heard that word, hopeful and optimism, those words, over and over. You know, in many ways, it reminds you of last year with Giannis. But Doc was asked about it before the game tonight, about Dame specifically. And I believe it was Tim Reynolds that asked him this in Miami about, you know, look, we've seen, I don't want to say a lot of players dealing with blood clots, but it's kind of popped up a little bit more the past couple of years. And it has traditionally been about 6 months that it takes guys to deal with it. We all know someone in all likelihood, or most of us do in our everyday walk of life, that's dealt with blood clots themselves. And they'll tell you, yeah, it's usually like 3 to 6 months that you're on blood thinners. You're not going to play in a basketball game on blood thinners because of, you know, what that could potentially do to you if something happens. But also, Damian Lillard has different care than any of us do in our everyday walk of life here. That, as we've started to learn, the Bucks feel like they got in on this early. And when he missed games with calf soreness, he was going through this testing, and they feel like they caught this is what it is and started him on this treatment then. He's been getting scans on a regular basis. You know, things that are pretty expensive for any of us to have those frequent check-ins multiple times a week with physicians. Not for professional athletes, right, with medical staff. So he's been going through that, and that's where the optimism part comes from of why they think this isn't necessarily going to be 3 months, 5 months, 6 months, and he's knocked out. We'll see. Maybe he can come back. But the question to Doc Rivers was, look, this has traditionally been 6 months, so why do you guys have this optimism? You know, for to paraphrase, why are you so hopeful when – traditionally, we don't see this that quickly. And, you know, Doc said, to sum it up, things have changed medically for the better through the years, which is good. And look, you saw Asar Thompson, I think it was January last year, that he was diagnosed with blood clots. He didn't return that season. Victor Wembanyama, around the same time, February, I believe, diagnosed with blood clots. Already ruled out for the season. It ended Chris Bosh's career, which everybody is quick to point to. But Doc's point, medically, things have changed and progressed where you have more access and more treatment options. And certainly professional athletes have much better care options than any of us. The location of the blood clot was also important, that it was lower. So not as quite as close to the heart and not quite as much of a threat there. Not to say there's no threat at all, but the location was very important as well. His was lower, but then closed with. But it still could be 6 months. We just don't know. And I think I, for one, am glad that Doc Rivers said that, because I don't want everyone to assume he's coming back. We obviously want him to come back. But this is a life-threatening condition that he's dealing with. So to hear the Bucks say, look, we're hopeful, we're optimistic, I think it was important for Doc Rivers to reiterate that, but also close with, but yes, it could be 6 months, and he could, or more potentially, and he could be ruled out for the rest of the year. We don't know yet, and I don't think we're going to know anything this week, probably not next week either, unless some miracle happens. So the big thing for the Bucks to focus on is Bobby Portis and Jericho Sims. And getting those guys back, what that does for your defense by way of your defensive rebounding, cleaning up possessions, closing possessions, securing the ball. Hopefully that pushes the defense closer to where we've seen it perform for largely the entire season, and that your offense can remain where it is. If you get Dame back, great. But I think what Doc Rivers said tonight was very important for everybody to take note of. Look, we've put the optimism message out there. I think the big takeaway is we feel better than, you know, last year with the Pistons and Ausar Thompson, and there's different variables in play. That was a historically bad Pistons team that had nothing to play for. The Spurs are already out of the postseason, so it's easier to shut them down. We feel better than other positions of where guys have developed this and their season was ended, in the case of Chris Bosh, more than your season. But you're not out of the woods. And us feeling better and being optimistic does not mean it's a 90% chance Damian Lillard is coming back or Dame is close to a return. It just means we feel better than saying it's over and he's not coming back this season. Is it going to be the Pistons or the Pacers, I should say? Is it going to be the Pacers? Is it going to be the Knicks that the Bucks play in the first round of the playoffs? What do the numbers suggest? We'll get into that and wrap up the show after this. All right, so the Bucks are back at it tomorrow against the New Orleans Pelicans, a Pelicans team that, to put it mildly, is not good. We had talked about it after the game with Dave Kane, and he even hinted at, we'll see if Giannis plays tomorrow after the workload he took on tonight, night two of a back-to-back. You still have one more back-to-back this season. Kevin Porter Jr. played 40 minutes off the bench too, but we'll see what it means for Giannis. I get the minutes load. It is a road game. Let's keep that in mind. And the player participation policy comes into play where you can't just necessarily sit a guy and say he's tired. And you especially don't like to do it, or the league doesn't like you to do that on road games. So that's why I do wonder if we're going to see Giannis sit the game against the Pelicans next week, a Thursday, before you hit the road to play the Pistons on Friday. Maybe you see it for both. Who knows? But it's a Pels team that's 21-56. It's the second worst record in the West. It's the third worst record in basketball. They played yesterday against the Lakers and lost. And that was a starting lineup by the Pelicans of Keon Brooks, Jose Alvarado, Bruce Brown, Kelly Olynyk, Yves Messi. That's their group that they're playing. Jamal Cain, Jeremiah Robinson Earl, Antonio Reeves, Elfrid Payton back in the league. That's their bench. So this is a game you need to expect to win. The Pacers play tomorrow night as well. They're in Denver against the Nuggets. Now, the Indiana Pacers, on paper, have some challenges left in this regular season. The numbers suggest the Pacers have the fifth most challenging schedule left in the league. Of the five games remaining, they have the Orlando Magic, and that game may be needed for seeding in the play-in tournament for Orlando. They have the Washington Wizards, and then they have the Nuggets tomorrow and two games with the Cavaliers. By the numbers, it's the fifth most challenging schedule, but the caveat is those two Cavs games, where they fall on the schedule. By the way, Cleveland's magic number is one to clinch the one seed, so they got to win one, or they need the Celtics to lose one. It's game number 80 and 82 that they play the Cavaliers. Cleveland is going to have everything wrapped up by then. And yes, you get a week off, but you also don't want to risk any type of injury in a competitive game leading into the playoffs. So the numbers say it's a really challenging schedule for the Pacers. It's probably not. Tomorrow is really the last of those that you can assuredly say, this is going to be a challenge, or this is going to be one of those difficult games. Maybe it's the same with Orlando, as we just mentioned. That's game number 81 that the Pacers have at home against the Magic, and it's a Magic team that, as of this moment, is in the seventh spot at 38-40. They're a game up in the loss column on the Hawks. They're two games up in the loss column on the Bulls. So you want both the Bulls and Hawks to start winning games now, if you're the Bucks, to put pressure on the Magic. So that game is a meaningful game. But this typically, and I've talked about this last year, I remember mentioning it when it came down to, are the Bucks going to be two or are they going to be three? And the Knicks win that game the final day of the regular season against the Bulls in the fashion that they won to get the two seed. It always comes down to one or two games that you look back on and you say, well, if you won that game, it's a much different story, and you all of a sudden feel pretty good about getting the four seed and getting home court advantage. I think for the Bucks, it's probably going to come down to that Suns game you lost on the road to Phoenix, or that Hawks game last weekend. Those are the ones that we feel like, yeah, if you won one of those games, right now you're two back in the loss column. And if the Pacers lose tomorrow and you win, it's one back going into the final week with four games. That's manageable. Making up 3-5 is going to be really, really challenging. Not impossible, but a lot has to fall into place for you. And that's what the numbers are telling us right now. With these games, these final scores updated, as of this moment, the Pacers have a 92% chance to get the four seed. The Bucks have an 8% chance at the four seed. But they had a 48% chance at the five seed. They were even, 5-6, coming into play tonight. It's now flipped massively. 64% chance that the Bucks are the five seed, only a 28% chance that they are the six seed. The numbers are great, right? But I would just say, I don't think those numbers really matter for 5-6 because you have two games left against the Pistons. Unless Detroit goes on a two or three game skid here leading up to that final week where you got a two game margin going into those final two games. If it's one game, throw the numbers out the window because it's really irrelevant, even if it, especially if it's tied. Those numbers are going to be irrelevant. The big one is, it's not impossible, but it's going to be incredibly challenging to get the Indiana Pacers, or to get the four seed, I should say. So the odds are suggesting we're getting the Bucks and the Pacers for the second round, second straight year in the first round, for the second time in franchise history. You go back to the 98 and 99 season. So the 99 and 2000 playoffs where the Bucks played the Pacers in the first round, once as an eight seed, once as a seven seed. And it's certainly feeling like that's what we're going to get once again. We'll see what that injury report looks like as the Bucks are back at it tomorrow night in New Orleans against the Pelicans. 7:30 tip tomorrow because for some reason, the Bucks and Miami Heat played at 8 o'clock Eastern time tonight, which still no clear reason as to why it wasn't night two of a back-to-back for the Heat. They don't play tomorrow night either. There was no back-to-back for the Pelicans, so we're unsure why this was a late game tonight by East Coast standards. But it pushes back that tip time in New Orleans tomorrow as well for the 23-hour rule. So 7:30 tomorrow in New Orleans. 7 o'clock is when our pregame coverage begins. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you then.